Introduce our main speaker for this evening, Sharon C. from Los Angeles.
Is that good? Hi, I'm Sharon, alcoholic. Hi, guys. It's nice to be here. Thank you, Lori. I used to work with Lori and known each other a long time. And Jean is here all the way from Iowa to hear me. No, she just moved here. And Teresa and Nancy came with me. And I guess Melody is here, who I used to sponsor. And these two I sponsor. And they're a handful, so I have to keep my eye on them, you know. But all is good. And Sandra, I'm trying. So we'll try so that you... Yeah, okay, good. Yay. Welcome. I was just thinking, it's been one of those years in the hallway. I'm like 43 years, 9 months and 5 days sober. Okay, there you go, something like that. So if I hang around, I'll be 44, and 4 scare me. So, you know, I'll hang in there, though. I'm in the hallway again, and I have not stopped going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have stayed here from the beginning through all the tough stuff I've been through. I had a sponsor, my second sponsor said, you know, you're in the hallway. And I, you know, yeah, well, it's the hallways that get you, you know, between one end and the other end. And you're in the hallway, and look at who's there with you. Somebody else in the room's having problems. It's not just you. Take the blinders off. So I would walk around and in my little mopey self, because my husband left me at 10 years for the newcomer, you know, and she was in the room and he was in the room, and it was crazy time. And we had gone to punk rock concerts because I was trying to figure out what's happening to my husband. He just turned into something else. And I'm wearing corporate clothes and he's wearing, like, you know, do-rags and all kinds of stuff and tattoos. And I'm secretary of our big meeting, and I have to stand there. And I was pregnant then, so I was bursting forth. And he's, you know, walking around with his nose broken from the Dead Kennedys concert. And, I mean, it's like, oh, my God. So I started trying to go to punk rock concerts with him. We used to go see the Cramps all the time. And so I made a T-shirt that said My Doll. I don't know if you young ones get it. But so at 10 years of sobriety, I'd have to walk around the room and find people having trouble. And he's back with his new pregnant and soon-to-be married wife. And I've got this baby, and we were married quite a while, you know, together 8 years. So, and I had my My Doll shirt on, and I cut my hair and Madonna'd it up with little white spikes all over so that you wouldn't hug me because I wanted to poke you. And it was just, you know, somebody walked by me and said, look at Sharon, she's got 10 years. Do you want what she's got? It was like, oh, man. And I heard her. I heard her. So I guess, newcomer, welcome to life. it doesn't say you're going to get the, you know, anything. I heard my husband say to somebody, you're not going to get everything you want, and you're not going to get your own way all the time, and you're not going to like everybody. And if you can handle that and you work these steps and you hang in here, you're going to have a great life of gratitude and joy and helping others, and you're going to want to do that. And it was like, okay, but that's the way he would invite people to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I guess if they stayed, they'd start working the steps. So it's not about you, newcomer. It's about the 10 people that are eating dinner tonight, not worried that, you know, you're going to come home while they're out at dinner and take the car. Or that your friends that come over, you know, mom's not going to have to take her purse and hide it in the bedroom. Or, you know, that they can go to a movie because the bail bondsman's not going to call because you're sitting with us tonight and they know you're safe. Teresa talked about being safe. You're safe. And they know that, so they can breathe a little easier. And they say that every newcomer has at least 10 people whose lives have changed because they're with us. So welcome, newcomer, and you've changed 10 lives already. Good job. You know, So that was one of my first big hallways in sobriety, and I've had a number of them, but I'm kind of in one now, and it's interesting to recreate yourself at this age. It's so much fun. And the road, I guess it gets narrower in sobriety too, because first of all, there's a lot of people that I got sober with that aren't around. There's a lot of wonderful people that touched my life in many, many ways that aren't with me anymore, but I carry their knowledge and their love in my heart. And it's also, you know, can't get away with as much as you used to get away with. You're on to yourself now. So, you know, I'm on to me, and I can't go into my defects of character and feel good about it. I know, once you're awakened, it's like, oh, I'm awakened. It's good, but it can be painful. But it's more painful for me to put my head in the sand and be unawakened. I have been in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous the moment I got here, through the good and the bad and the indifferent. And I've tried to make life better for a lot of mothers who sleep at night by helping others. And that, to me, is one of the biggest joys that I've been able to give back. And, you know, I was hooked when I got here, and I had no real idea I was hooked. And, you know, I was a little girl from Iowa, and I looked for the mothership. And I know, I thought, I'm in Iowa, where are they? Come back and get me. And I liked Gandhi, and I liked, you know, I liked big things. I liked freedom. I liked people that made a difference. And I was also kind of a little young rebel revolutionary, and I started drinking in my teens, and I stopped drinking when I was 2 weeks into my 26th year of life, because I hit the wall. I was drinking at Barney's Beanery. It was July 27th, 1975, in West Hollywood, where I first saw the Big Book. I was trying to get to Hawaii, and I had been living in New Orleans, and I was fired from being a bartender at a really seedy bar. They just said, you know, you have a bad attitude, don't come back. It was like, who cares? And I met some guy from Houston, I think, going to Hawaii. And I said, all right, let's go, because that's the way I traveled. That's where I traveled. There were many, many, many months my parents didn't know where I was. They have four siblings, and I'm the one. But I'm sitting there on a bar stool. I'm 180 pounds of toxic. I had my gallbladder removed. I had pancreatitis. I had a red dashiki that, you know, because I just, you know, that's all I had was my red dashiki, a couple pair of jeans, a couple T-shirts, my Panama hat so you couldn't see my face and I couldn't see hers. And I had splotches on my face. I don't really know what they were, but I met this guy in New Orleans, and, you know, he's probably in a blackout. We end up in Barney's Beanery, and I think he kind of came to. I went, oh, hello. I said, we're going to Hawaii, right? And he said, you know, I'll be right back. And he left $50 on the bar, and then I never saw him again. So I'm a blackout drinker, too, and I used to end up in situations go, oh, my God, I got to get out of this one. I remember once being in Florida swimming with dolphins, but I thought they were sharks because I saw the fins. And then it was like I realized, okay, good. And then they wouldn't speak to me because I guess I was driving down the freeway or interstate or whatever they have the wrong way, telling them all to shut up or something. I mean, I am not a fun drinker now anymore at the end of this drinking. But I was a traveler. I hitchhiked north, south, east, west. I got kicked out of organic farms for drinking. I drank their bong wine. I mean, I'm trying to deal with these people living on the edge. I want to live on the edge too, but I am like edgier than those people because they don't want me around. They took me on a picnic to Mount Baldy and left me, and they left the dog that they didn't like too. So me and the dog were like, I thought we were having a picnic. Bye. And the organic farmers didn't like me either in northern Wisconsin, but they left me the crop, so that was good, the very nice crop. So there I am, Barney's, and this guy's gone, and I'm sitting there, and it's July 27th, and this guy says, do you want to go to Palm Springs? I said, sure. And they had Harleys, and so a bunch of us went, and I think he just looked around the bar and said, we need a little extra weight. It's really windy going out in the desert. That one in the red dashiki looks like she might do. She needs a little ballast or something in the back. So we get to this place, and they don't want to drink with me. I am not a nice drinker anymore. I mean, I used to be so much fun. I love, drinking made me feel like I went to India and met the Dalai Lama. You know, drinking made, it was spiritual for me. Drinking shut my head off. Drinking said, let's party. Drinking said, I can do anything. Drinking made me feel omnipotent. And then it doesn't. you know, and then it's the hangovers and the things you wake up to and the people that you have to slide across the bar your dignity for alcohol to work. You have to slide across the bar the love of your family. You have to slide across the bar any sort of musical art talent that God had given me for King Alcohol to work. I'd say, yeah, take it. I need go King Alcohol. Me and alcohol, that was it. And so we get to Palm Desert and Palm Springs, actually, and they didn't want to party with me anymore, so I'm in a blackout. I don't know. I don't remember. I only got kicked out of two places. One was the Bastille in the French Quarter, which was very local. We painted the windows black, so you couldn't. There was no sunlight that got in. And I got 86 because I broke the ceiling fan because I guess I was dancing on the bar, and I wondered why I had lost some hair, you know. But but I had broken the bottles. I had, like, fallen and broken, like, not the well whiskey, but the good bottles. So the boss was mad at me, so out. And then I got kicked out of a place in Hollywood called Filthy McNasty's. And I don't even remember why. I don't even know why. So there I am at this nightclub with these guys, and they just left me there because I guess I got mean or nasty or sobbed on their shoulder too long or whatever it was happening in my blackout. And when I came to, I was in a situation where I had been in those situations before. I had two people that were doing me harm. And I had, you know, I always negotiated my way out or cried my way out or my dog would bite our way out or I would manipulate our way out or I would just get out, right? Of those situations when you kind of, you know, hitchhiking, you know, or blackouts and coming to or whatever it is. We're survivors, man. Norm Alpe used to talk about seconds and inches, and it's just by seconds and inches that we're here. If one thing would have gone wrong, we wouldn't have the luck to be sitting in a seat of Alcoholics Anonymous, where, first of all, as Bill says, it's a spiritual kindergarten. We do find a way to enable us to be sober. And then after that, you know, that we were given the grace to lead an effective life. And then after that, that's working the steps, giving it away, working with others, saying yes to A, saying yes to life, all of that. Then we get to have our own, what he calls, theology. Our own, it's not a religion. It's our own spiritual way of living. We get to each find our own. How brilliant. Because we're all like, I don't believe in this. Don't. Believe in what you want. Just show up and work the steps. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful way we live here. But here I am in this situation, and they're like, you know, kicking me in the face and all this stuff. And I came to, I realized, oh, my God, because I had violent blackouts. I mean, I would kind of come to and just, I don't know what they were. I would, like, maybe it was seizures or something. I'd come to, and I would, the people were choking me, but they weren't there. I think I needed more alcohol, and I would kind of wake up and have those dreams. And but I realized this was happening, and I didn't fight for my life that night. It was the first time I didn't fight for my life. I said, who the hell cares? And they tossed me off the side of the road, and a gardener found me, and I ended up in the hospital, and I ended up on a gurney, and there were, you know, policemen there, and they were, like, having me write because I had nothing. I had nothing. And so I had to write who I was, and they were prepping me for surgery. My jaw was broken in three places on this side, and my nose was broken, concussion, and it was a mess. I was a mess. But this is the alcoholic thinking. I'm signing my name as to who I am on this little, probably clipboard or something, and I saw the word in front of my name. It said victim, and I went, yes. I was shooting for victim. I was so happy to see that. If I could have smiled at that moment, I would have smiled. I'm numb to life. I am numb to spirit. I am numb to anything that I could ever have been given to be able to change the world like I wanted to do when I was a little girl, just like you, Teresa. You know. And so 2 weeks in the hospital, my mom called and found out where I was. So she got a phone call and didn't tell her what hospital I was in, but I was in California. And she found out 2 days later after my sister and her called. So my mother slept at night all the many years she was alive in alcohol because I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And just for that, I thank you. And but nobody sent me an airline ticket this time. Nobody came and said, hey, let's go start over in Phoenix, because it had north, south, east, west. It was easy to find your way around Phoenix. They had drive-through liquor stores. They had cold, dark bars. I love bars. And, you know, but nobody came and bailed me out. And I was in there for a couple of weeks. I had a detective. These people were caught. It was, and they just kept, you know, giving me morphine or something. I don't know what they were giving me. But this guy came that I had met in Barney's, a beanery at that bar where I first saw the big book. This girl was getting her court card signed, passing it down the bar, going to AA drunk as a skunk. The only thing I ever knew about AA until I came here. But he said I could come live with him. He lived above a liquor store, and he knew I was had to go back to court. He said I could borrow his car, and I had nowhere to go. So I am living above the liquor store. He's going off to work every morning. He's buying me cheap red wine. He's unscrewing the top. I put my straw and I stick it through all the wires on my face that's keeping it up here right now, where the tooth had been kicked out, and I would suck on the wine. And I was bone tired, and no friendly direction. And August 20th, he came to me and he said, you got to leave, you're depressing me. Yeah, right? I know, it's like if I could have cried, I could cry, but I think I'd stop crying at that moment. And I called my mom, because what do? You call mom. And my mom said, Sharon, we can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army. And mom wouldn't send me anything. So I looked down, and there was a phone number there, and it was the girl, Chris, that was the one that went to AA, but I'm not relating any of this. See, that was my day to come to you. When I look back on it, I just think if that phone number would have been turned upside down, I don't know where I'd go, but it was sitting there by the phone because he was dating her. And I just remembered she was always nice to me. Maybe she'll give me a place to stay. So I called her, and she's, of course, dating the guy where I was sleeping on his couch. He said, she knew what had happened to me. She said, I can't help you, but Suzanne can. And little did I know, she was not sober that day, or she would have 12-stepped me, I guess. That's what she told me later. And I called a stranger. I don't call strangers. I don't ask for help. I find my own way. It's weak to ask for help. And I called this woman. That's the way I talk. First 3 months in AA, that's the way I talked. You guys were like, you just look at me and go, are you new? It's like, I thought, how do they know? But Suzanne could tell the liquor store I lived above because it was the alcoholic liquor store. She could tell it was a Duck Pond liquor store. She knew exactly where it was. She was 5 years sober. So that's the number I called. I don't know, I'm calling a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She could have not been there. She answered the phone. She told me, she said, put your drink down and put your joint down too. And I thought, how does she know I'm working both here? You know, I mean, she got my attention. She got my attention. She knew exactly where to tell me to sit. So me, I go and sit on those steps with my broken self, my broken spirit, my broken shoes, my ripped jeans, my bleach-stained T-shirt, my backpack with the book Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass, because I knew all about that. And so I sat on those steps with my sad little sorry self, and this car pulls up, and it's a bright yellow Volkswagen, and it's like, I can't even look at it. It's too, you know, this is actually too bright for me in here, but that's okay. It would not have been a place I would have drank at all, even if you were buying to shoot out the lights or something. But so, you know, there I was in this Volkswagen. I wasn't going to go in there, and they just picked me up and brought me in the back, and then you can't get out, and the windows don't go down. And I am detoxing. It's August. It's hot. I'm unbathed. It's coming out of my pores. And they talked to me at every red light. The driver would turn around, talk, 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 talk. And then she'd drive, and then the other one would turn around, talk, 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 talk. And nobody asked me about me. I kept, you know, even in the state I'm in, I'm thinking, well, that's not very nice. They're not even asking me about me. So I had the newspaper clipping in my pocket about the unemployed bartender from New Orleans and on and on and on, in case you asked, and you never asked. people were just like, oh, you look tired, kid. Take your pack and stay with us. Take your pack off and stay with us. I thought, how do they know I'm tired? And a man named Chuck Nesbitt, who used to be in our, he's gone many years, and he was a sweet man, and he would come over, and he invited me to Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, you look tired, kid. Take your pack off and stay with us for 30 days. And then he walked away, and then he came back, because I think he knew I needed to hear this. He said, no, you look really tired. Why don't you stay with us for, I think he said 90 days or something. I don't even know. But he invited me for longer, and it felt really good that I was invited longer than maybe the normal person. This is what's going through my head. Good thing I can't talk for 3 months. It's really a blessing. And I didn't know I'm really at AA. I think I'm at a church, and I think I've been there, done that. I've tried a bunch of stuff. I'm a fallen away Catholic. Me and God have had, we've decided not to talk, and that's fine, or even talk, you know, be around each other. And that was the way I lived. And so I thought pretty soon. But the guy hooked me. He stood at the podium, and I heard him say, you know, I always waited for the mothership, and I wanted him to say, here I am. You can come home now, Bill. And I lifted my head up and looked around at all of you mothership people. All right, aliens. Been looking for you my whole life. He hooked me. He got a little spark out of me. So you never know who's going to hook you in here. And I hope you know that each one of us have at least one special hook in us for one special person who's only going to hear it from us at the right time. And if you leave, do we leave that on the seat so the person never gets it? I think somebody else will sit in that seat and pick it up for that person, because we help each other. We help. It's we admitted. It's a we group. We're in this together. And actually, it was Nancy that was leaving AA for the, I don't know, the fifth time or something, and she told me this story, and it's the same thing. You know, she was leaving for the fifth time. This doesn't work. I've tried it. I'm just going to go, you know, kill myself or something. And she was leaving, and she was walking around the corner halfway through the meeting, and she heard a guy talking to another guy outside. And she said, I don't even know who it was, because I only knew people by their shoes. And what she heard him say was to the other guy, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. And he hooked her. And she came back in and sat down, and she's got, how many years? 34, right? Both these girls have, yeah, 34 years. Almost. Yeah, that's right. Not yet. But I just love the stories. We all have a story. If we're here, we have a story, and that story is going to help someone else. It's going to help someone else. And that's the way we do it. It's grassroots here. It's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to make the differences between us come down to... You know, we can spot each other in the airport sometimes. I mean, we really can. You know, it's like, it's usually the two cups of Grande Starbucks or Venti's or, you know, the Big Gulp or something. And, you know, waving their arms around. And it's like you hear the buzzword. It's go, hey, or, you know, you're my people. I have a family of blood, but you're my people. You're my family of understanding. And I've always really wanted to find you. Now... Yeah. Boy, it was a hard road starting because I didn't know anything, but that's a good way to start. I had a concussion, so I was really out of it. I had to go back to court. I was in a blackout. I had to tell my detective, you know, I didn't know who was who and what happened and let them deal with it. And I had no clothes to wear. I had to go out to this court. I had no clothes. I had no car. I drove that guy's car out by myself. I think I was still in my jeans or something. And I guess somebody heard about it, so they didn't send me alone anymore. And somebody gave me a little, it was a green outfit to wear. And that man, Chuck Nesbitt, saw me one night standing over by the wall. You know, newcomers riding by the wall by themselves, it could be dangerous. So he came over to see what I was doing, and I was keeping track of every ride I got, every floor I slept on, every cigarette pack that was given to me, everybody that, you know, gave me $5 or something. I was keeping track of all of it because, you know, I was raised with manners, and before I leave, I'm going to pay you back because I always leave. I always leave. And Chuck just looked at that list. He didn't really say much. He just put it back, and he said, Sharon, someday You're going to have a car, license, registration, insurance, all in the same name. And you can give newcomers rides. You're going to have a couch someone can sleep on. You're going to have an extra $10 that when that newcomer goes to the bathroom, you can slide it in her purse. And you're going to find out someone's starting a job, and they're going to need some clothes, and you're going to take them out in the park. So I'm boy meets girl on the AA campus. I went home. I finally did my inventory. I went home. I did the amends. My dad and I hadn't sat down at the same table 7 years. My dad and I hadn't been eye to eye for at least that long, maybe six. We had a couple of eye to eyes. It was never any physical abuse, but boy, I let my dad have it when he'd say, "What is wrong with you? You want to know, Dad? Sit down and listen." And I would tell my dad stuff that he didn't need to know about his little girl. And then he'd try to help me, and I'd back him off. I was just so defiant and so cruel. And I was just thinking about it about 2 months ago. I was talking to my sponsor, who's been Clancy for the last 33 years, 34 years. I was talking to him. He's going to be 92, and I'm sitting here giving him a little bit of scenario about this entrepreneurial thing I'm trying to do and all of this, and he just said, "It's not working because you're defiant." And I thought, oh, bingo, I hate you. You're right on the money. Jesus, you know. I still have that defect of character. I'm still defiant in many little ways. I just want to be a good rebel, you know. I should have told him that. But yeah, my dad, I made those amends, and the sun didn't, you know, fall out of the sky, and he just said, "I always wanted you to be happy," and it was very short, and I went back, and she said, "It's a good start," and I got married, and my father came out and walked me down the aisle, and he went to an AA meeting, my home group, the Pacific group, and somebody took him to the literature table, and he bought a big book, and he thought you guys were fun and funny, and the wedding was great, and my dad went home and read that book. And at some point, he took my dossier out of his, you know, safe or whatever it was. You know, I was thrown in jail in Bogalusa, Louisiana, after when I was with the carnival. I mean, don't even ask. That's a whole another chapter of my story. My mother thought I was living on this organic farm making, you know, making maple syrup and honeybees, and I had just, you know, harvested the crop as much as I could because I'm getting out of town because they left me and I didn't care. And my mother had to go back and forth 5 hours to this house to get things back and to have the cat grab the cat because the cat had been kicked by the horse and the cat lived. But every time I would go back to Iowa and see that cat, it would run. It's like, and you know, my mother had, I'm not hurting anyone but me, Mom, leave me alone. I'm writing a book. You know, God bless my mom. And life was definitely in session. So my dad, I'm married, things are good, I've got better jobs, I'm sponsoring other people, I'm afraid to fly, I'm doing a job where I have to get on planes all the time. The fear was just, the fear of that and the fear of being shot, I had two huge fears and I had to work through them. And getting on a plane my sponsor said, oh, talk to Clancy, he flies all the time. That was a lady named Ginny. So I went and talked to him, and he said, don't watch the wings. So then I get seated right by the wings, and then the wings, they go like this. But they're supposed to, but I never watched wings before, so I don't know they're supposed to go like that. And I'm waiting for the little, you know, that little furry guy to show up on the wing, and, you know, it's like, and I'm going, okay, is it faith, not fear? Is it fear, not faith? What is it? And I'm hanging on. I got my book, and I got these travel agents I'm taking down somewhere to show them property down some, you know, resort area. And I'm crazy. I'm just crazy about it. And then I thought, well, God will give me a sign if I'm not supposed to get on the plane, right? So right before I run out the door, I get a call from Central Office because I married a bee, and they used to have a Rolodex. So I was a bee. So we did a lot of real 12-step calls, and I lived by the airport and all these seedy motels. It was fabulous. And so they called for a 12-step call. I said, I got to catch a plane. And then I get on the plane. I went, crap. That was it. God was telling me not to get on the plane. Go to the 12-step call. Okay, we're going down. We're just going down. That's the way it is. And I saw there was a seat in first class, and I thought, okay, I think God's sitting in first class. I think that's where God is. God's always in first class, you know? And that seat was empty the whole way, and I just thought, okay, I think I'm going to be okay, and it left me. And every time, I do a lot of flying now, and I just let God get on, and I look at the pilot's eyes. They're a little red, maybe. And I've been in a lot of situations, and you know, I'm here because I'm here, and I'm here to be of service, and I'm maximum service to God and the people about us, page 77, and I finally found my purpose. I looked and looked and looked and looked, and it was right there in front of me. And maximum means a lot of work for people like us, you know. To God, Chuck used to say, it rains on the just and the unjust. Everybody gets a shot. And the people about us. And being fit is a daily. It's all about now. God's in the now. God's in, you know, when I breathe and I'm present, you know, Sandy Beach was one of my heroes and one of my friends, and he golfed with my husband, and we had so many beautiful memories. And what he was doing in the end of his life, he was trying to be the least disturbed person in the room. Wow. And I have a little thing, a little band that says, be the least disturbed person in the room, and I wear that a lot. I actually snapped a few and broken them, so I have more made. But I just thought, you know, that's it. If I am the least disturbed person in the room, wherever I am, in the airport, in a store, on the freeway, you know, I mean, if I'm going to let you in, I'm letting you in. I don't expect a thank you, and if you don't give me a thank you, I'm not going to give you a finger. I mean, we used to do all of that, you know. I just let you in. Big deal. Breathe. God is now. Life is now. There's a lot to do. This is the one place that makes sense for me. It's a big, bad world out there that I don't get a lot, but I come and sit with you here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it makes sense. I am an alcoholic, and this is my medicine. And I get out there sometimes and forget there's hope. And then someone calls, and I'll remember it again, or I come sit with you, and that's right, there's hope, chapter 5. Thank you, God, we read that. And so with my dad, I want to tell you about my dad. He ran that dossier, and the lawyer, and the bail bondsman, and all that stuff, and all the crazy stuff to get me out of that jackpot in Bogalusa, Louisiana. And So that was in there, and the car, and a lot of things. You know, I used to go to the bookstore when I went to the university and just charge all this stuff and then go sell it so I could drink with my fake ID. He had all of that in there, and I called my dad because my sponsor said, I'm making better money, and it's time that you call your dad and make those financial amends. So I called my dad, and he gave me a total, just like that. He was ready. He read the big book. He ran the calculator tape, and he was ready. And I called my sponsor and said, oh, my God, it's too high. And she laughed, and she said, well, what can you afford? And so we talked about it, called him, and he accepted my payment terms. I called her back, and she said, okay, that I want you to don't be late with that check you send your dad every month because Bill and Bob are watching, our founders. Thank you. Okay, I was not late because of that. And then she said, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? What does that mean? Grow through this with my dad. If she would have said, are you willing to have redemption? Are you willing to give your dad redemption? Are you willing to have forgiveness in your relationship? Are you willing to be his little girl again? Are you willing to let the innocence come into this relationship? I would have said, never will happen. He's got three other wonderful siblings from a Mensa to a doctorate, right? And there's Sally with the horse in Alaska, whatever. Not that I'm jealous or anything, but I did tell her she was adopted for many years, but when we were little, I made my amends. So my dad got the check, and she said, I want you to put a note in with that, and don't tell him about your life. And it was such a struggle to do that. And then one day I was writing a little note to him with the check, and I got to the bottom of the paper, because I remember there were little turtles along the bottom. I got to the bottom, and I had written a whole page without thinking about what to say, and, oh, how does that sound? Or I had written a whole letter to my dad. So he got the check and note for about 5 years, and then he called me the day after Christmas and said, Merry Christmas, I don't want your money anymore. Don't want it, you're done. But don't stop sending me your notes. And I didn't know these things were happening until I was in Iowa, and I went to town. We go to town, and we were coming back, and we were together in the car, and it was good. And then, you know, it was hot. He said, you want a root beer? It's a root beer stand. And A&W went over there and got a root beer, and I went back to the car. And he said, no, let's go sit under the tree over there. There's a little, you know, there's a picnic table. So we went and sat by the picnic table, on the picnic table, and we talked. And we talked about life, and we talked about Iowa, and we talked about the birds, and we talked about stuff that fathers and their daughters talk about. And I was this little girl. Little did I know that was going to happen. Thank you, Jenny. She's been gone many years now. And after she was, after she came back from Paris, she had 21 days instead of 21 years, and that's when I showed up at Clancy's door, and my baby was fine, and I'm sobbing. And he said, okay, we'll try. I asked him to sponsor me. We'll try. I think I was scaring him. I was sobbing. He said, we'll try. And so we've been trying for 34 years. It's been working out. I need a sponsor louder than my head. When I went through that mess at 10 years, he said, Sharon, you'll walk through this with dignity and grace. And if he stopped there, I would have said, I want revenge. But he said, so you can be an example to others. And little did I know, because it rains on the just and the unjust, that when he left her and moved on with her baby, a year and a half old, like my same time, his child with me was a year and a half old. He had this internal thing from being a foster child that he just didn't want to deal with. So little did I know that she said when he left her, she knew she could do it because she had watched me. You know, it's everybody gets it. Everybody gets our example. Everybody gets our example. People out there, people in here. It's for fun and for free. And after that was over, I met my man, Casey, and we were together a long time. Oh, God, he was just so handsome. My sponsor said, take it slow. I'm going, how slow, how long, you know. But I listened. I think I was short by like 3 days or something, you know. And we didn't live together. And I went back to, my son got kicked out of kindergarten. He ended up at the Catholic church, and or the Catholic school and the Catholic church. And my son, who, he liked structure. He's not an alcoholic. So, he, you know, I'm going, yeah, my kid likes structure. Okay, and the nuns and the people I taught him knew he was creative, and they supported him. And he's very successful in life today, and he found his passion, and he has compassion, and he's good. He can have a beer and watch the Liverpool team that he loves, you know, and not blow his life up. But I just want to tell you that we didn't live together, but we lived 10 minutes apart, and it was very exciting for 18 years like that. I just got to tell you, it was really good. And we were very committed to each other. We traveled a lot, and we were better together. We put ourselves together equally as partners. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we were more powerful as a couple. And he got malignant melanoma, and they gave us 7 months, and we ended up with 2 years and 2 months, and he fought it. And we went all over so he could play, you know, hit that little ball all over Ireland and Australia and places. And I held him in my arms on his last moments, and there was joy and love and AA and so much God in that room. I mean, you could cut it with a knife. You could feel the people coming for him. You just knew. There were a lot of things that happened that made me a believer. And 4 years later, I held my mom in the same way, and she was 95. And my dad was killed in 99, an accident on his land. And we were good. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't sit on your amends. That Catholic school has a carnival every spring, and guess who volunteered? Because I used to rip off little kids. If I didn't want to give them a teddy bear, I had a shooting gallery. They had hit three little metal targets down, but I was drinking my tequila, not in the mood, so I just pop one of those targets they hit down, up. And they go, no, no. I said, no, you only hit two. And then their dads would come, and the dads would come, and that's how I ended up in this jackpot in Bogalusa in jail, because the owner said, that little girl from Wisconsin's trouble. Even the carnival didn't want me. You guys want me here. I'm useful here. I sit here. We get to hold hands at the end of the meeting, and I am connected. I sponsor, and I am sponsored. I let God flow through me. I let God come out of me. I try. My dog thinks her name is God. You know, backwards dog, God, right? But every morning I wake up, and I go, okay, God, 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 because in my head, the vulture sometimes sits on the edge and goes, I've been waiting for you. We've been having a talk all night. So, you know, my dog thinks that God is her morning name, and once I get fed, then I sit with my God, and I answer the phone, and I live my life, and I do my best, and I'm in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I smile at people out there. I was in France, and I'm on the metro, and I'm smiling at people, and they're looking at me like, what's this wrong? What's wrong? I think I got half of the metro to smile, and it was just awesome. And my husband and the one, I'll tell you the wind story, and then I'm going to sit down. My husband was sick one day and going to chemo again, and we were sitting at the table, and the wind was blowing, and I'm going off to work. And he just said, Sharon, go to work, keep the insurance, you know. And he didn't like me to go to treatment with him because he had his guys take him. And the people in the treatment center said, we always felt better when Casey came in. And I was complaining, and we're having our morning coffee and our morning meeting. And, he said, yeah, I don't like this either. You know, it's really hard. You know, it's hard having this disease, and I'm in pain a lot. And he said, look outside, Sharon, do you see the wind? And I went, yeah, there's a big window in front of our table. I said, yeah, I see the wind. Look at the stuff blowing. It's going to be one of those Santa Ana days. And, you know, there's a tumbleweed going down the street. And he's kind of quiet, and he said, no, Sharon, do you see the wind? And he emphasized the word see. And I thought, okay, kung fu here, you know, grasshopper, sensei. I thought, this is a moment I want to pay attention to. So I said, I got it. I said, no, I don't with my eyes see the wind. He said, you see what's happening from the wind, right? You see the effects of the wind, right? And I said, yeah, I see the effects of the wind. Okay. He said, and that's the way I feel about God through all of this. It's tough some days. I just try to make it a better day. I try to think of good things. I try to be nice to people. But I don't see God in this disease. But what I do every single day is I go out into the world and I look for the effects of God. So I want to thank you for listening, for being my mothership, for allowing me to have Even in the hallway, I know there's a lot of you in there. I'm going to throw up a window, and if the door cracks, we'll stick our foot in there and run like hell through it to the new view. So thanks for having me.